You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Episode 191. Today's episode is all about the Dewdrop Inn, a historic music hall being renovated and refurbished. The last show was a Q&A episode with listener questions. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we jump in, let me talk about the people that make this show possible. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum, located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. Check out their online publication called First Draft. It's a combination blog and online exhibition space. Right now, they have two temporary exhibits that are both ending soon, and you want to check them out if you can. Through November 5th, 2023, there's an exhibit about the women's right to vote. It's called Yet She Is Advancing. The 19th Amendment, of course, granted American women the right to vote in 1920, but Louisiana law has effectively disenfranchised black women. As many white women began going to the polls and increasing their political participation in segregation-era New Orleans, African-American women continued to fight for access to the ballot. The exhibit tells a decades-long story through objects, images, documents, and interactive displays, and even through the words of the New Orleans women who fought for nearly 100 years to persist in their struggle to obtain the right to vote. And until October 8, 2023, you can check out the Smithsonian's traveling exhibit called American Democracy, A Great Leap of Faith. As always, the Historic New Orleans Collection is completely free. It somehow continues to fly under the radar, even though I think it's just one of those places that shouldn't be missed. Go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip. If you own a copy of my book, The Beyond Bourbon Street Insider's Travel Guide to New Orleans, you've seen the work of James Cullen of Accidental Cajun Photography. Whether it's portraits, events, wedding, or lifestyle, or photojournalism, Accidental Cajun Photography provides quality and value. James also offers photography instruction and sells his fine art prints at theaccidentalcajun.com. For inquiries, email accidentalcajun@gmail.com. And last but not least, our newest sponsor, All the Bitter. They make 100% alcohol-free bitters using organic ingredients. They've won more than 20 awards from major spirit competitions, and they can be used in both alcohol-based and alcohol-free concoctions. I've had them in many different kinds of drinks and on vanilla ice cream, which is really good, actually. They have four main bitters now, with several experimental varieties coming along. I have the New Orleans, inspired by Peychaud's, as well as Orange, Lavender, and Aromatic, which is inspired by Angostura. Place your order at allthebitter.com and use code BBS15 to get 15% off your order. Or you can shop locally in New Orleans at the Dreamhouse Lounge. Now, on to today's topic. The Dewdrop Inn was once a major music venue, largely showcasing black artists. It fell into disrepair and it's been shuttered for years. Today we're going to learn about the work being done to bring it back to life. To do that, I'm joined by real estate developer Curtis Doucette Jr. Welcome to the show, Curtis. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for responding to my inquiry and being willing to talk about it. I want to get into the Dewdrop Inn, but let's talk a little bit about your background. What's your story?
Let's see if we can condense that story a little bit. We've got, you know, I've got about a little bit over a 20-year history now in terms of real estate development. Okay. I am from here, born and raised in New Orleans, and I've lived here almost all my life.
Okay.
Went to, you know, school here, K through 12, Dillard University.
Nice.
And then the only time that I've lived outside of the city is when I went to Columbia University in New York City, which is where I honed my skills in real estate development.
Mm-hmm.
But even prior to going to Columbia University, I started off in this business literally by renovating and moving into a duplex. So I took the long, long route into getting to large scale projects. Did a lot of development starting in, as I said, in 2002 through 2008 for good reason. That kind of stalled things for me, right?
Sure.
But I would do a lot of rehab. It was a way I didn't come into this business with a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So doing the rehabs, putting in some sweat equity, learning a lot about construction. Let me be clear, I don't do the construction. but I've learned enough to know when someone's doing their job well and right. when prices are good. And so I built a portfolio that way. Hurricane Katrina really kind of expedited my career in a lot of ways.
Sure.
It created a need to go back and redo some of my properties, so I learned. And then I also had an opportunity to pick up some additional properties and rehab those as well. And it also developed a great story for going into graduate school, you know, a story of resilience, which most of us New Orleanians, we've got that story down. Right?
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah. So, but then there in graduate school, I met my business partners who live in New York, but they're here quite a bit. I'd say they split their time between New York and New Orleans. And we've worked on a lot of things. We've built some affordable housing for sale. Mm-hmm. Whether we've rehabilitated or built new, and we've used the city's soft second funds to create some opportunities for homeowners. Additionally, we've done garden-style apartment complexes that we've rehabilitated. Our flagship project to date is called Bonneville in Bywater.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a 70-unit apartment complex. Mm-hmm. It's very new. It was completed last year in June. And we've got 70 units plus some commercial space. And we're in the process right now of negotiating an LOI with a business that I'm excited about. So I hope that works out.
Nice.
Yeah. And so all of those things are the paths that led to the Dew Drop Inn. I am an affordable housing developer, as I mentioned, and that is some of the toughest financing to get to work. So if there's anywhere to a training ground for flexing your creative finance muscles, it's affordable housing. And the Dew Drop Inn needed exactly that skill set.
Yeah, it had been languishing for a while.
Yeah.
You know, various people had tried to take it on or were interested in taking it on. I guess we should step back just a bit and maybe explain to people where the Dew Drop Inn is and what's its historical significance.
Yeah, so the Dew Drop Inn is at 2836 LaSalle. So it's on LaSalle Street between Washington and 6th, or a little bit broader, between Washington and Louisiana. And it is a place of huge significance in the world of music. It is hard to think of a great artist in the 50s and 60s, maybe even the 40s, who didn't perform there. The likes of Ray Charles spent a lot of time there. I believe that he lived at the Dew Drop Inn. If not, he was down the street at the Foster Hotel and walked there every day. I know that for a fact at this point. But he spent a lot of time at the Dew Drop Inn and became somewhat of a family member to the owner and his family. Little Richard spent a lot of time at the Dew Drop Inn, and it wasn't just the fact that we have a big name. He was formed in a lot of ways because of his interactions with the Dew Drop Inn. He met a gentleman named Escarita, who taught him a lot, from his sartorial style, the way he dressed, to his musical style. And so if you were to Google Little Richard and Escarita, or just Little Richard and the Dew Drop Inn, you'd see a song called Meet All Your Fine Friends at the Dew Drop Inn. Escarita sang that song first. But the bigger story is that Little Richard probably would not have recorded Tutti Frutti were it not for his interactions at the Dew Drop Inn. And so then, of course, there's Marvin Gaye, one of my favorites. Deacon John tells me that he sang with Marvin Gaye at the Dew Drop Inn while sitting on Etta James's lap. It's one of my favorite stories. I tell it all the time. So
it's amazing.
But yeah, but I mean, so, you know, Ike and Tina and Sam Cooke, Aretha Franklin, James Brown, all of those names, Alan Toussaint, Irma Thomas, you got people like James Booker, Huey Piano Smith, Deacon John, all of those folks performed at the Dew Drop Inn. And I could go on and on and on with names of people that performed at the Dew Drop Inn. And so not only is it famous because those people performed there, but there's a magic that happened at the Dew Drop Inn. There were late night jam sessions. And the context of this is important, is because this is during segregated United States days. I don't want to just say the segregated South. So black folks could not just stay at any hotel. And in some cases, they couldn't just perform at any venue. Even when they could perform at a different venue, they had to go somewhere else to sleep.
Right.
That would turn into these magical jam sessions that are legendary. They would go all night. So much so, I've heard that musicians would go in and go to sleep and wake up and participate in the jam session. And so at that time, you had music making some monumental changes. And I firmly believe that the Dew Drop Inn is in that conversation, one of those places, the hollow ground, where those changes took place in the world of music. But our history goes beyond just the world of music. I didn't mention, but we were listed in the Green Book. Mm. So as we talk about segregation and the importance of this place, Frank Pagne, who was the original owner of the Dew Drop Inn and the visionary that made all of this happen, he and his patrons would get arrested quite frequently for race mixing. Mm. And so, as I always say, white people like good music too, all right? Yeah. And so folks would come into the Dew Drop Inn, and some of those people, quite popular, Zachary Scott was a famous actor, Hollywood actor. He had come into the city. He was arrested. It's probably one of the most notable nights, but it happened all the time. Uh-huh. He was arrested along with Frank and other patrons. And with this recurring frequently, it was clearly an interruption to Frank's business. So he hired some attorneys to fight the city of New Orleans on that particular law. Mm-hmm. And those attorneys that he hired were A.P. Turow and Dutch Morial.
Oh, wow.
And we know the great history that those guys went on to contribute in the city of New Orleans. The way that I understand the story, ultimately that legal action became unnecessary because the Civil Rights Act was passed. And so I don't think it went all the way as far as it could have.
Sure.
But Frank was fighting it. There's also Patsy Vidalia, very important history at the Dew Drop Inn. Patsy was considered by back then called a cross-dresser. And Patsy was the toast of the town, I believe, is what Patsy called himself. And with that, the Dew Drop Inn had the biggest gay ball every Halloween. It was like the biggest event. I was told by Frank Pagne's grandson, Kenneth Jackson, who I actually purchased the building from him and some family members. He said that was probably our biggest event of the year, every year. And so with that, there's just stories upon stories about the significance of this place that, I mean, the music is why people love it. But right. When you hear a little bit more, there's like, it's like an onion full of layers.
Yeah. And when did it close? Do you know about
Yes. Well, that's also layered. So it thrived from the time of opening in 1939 until the late 60s, early 70s. I would say probably stopped thriving in the late 60s. Mm-hmm. Part of what killed it, ironically, is integration. Folks had opportunities to go other places, whether it be for a place to stay or a place for entertainment. But at that same time, Frank Pagne's health was failing around the late 1960s. He ultimately died in 1972. And that was the end of the Dew Drop era, the legendary era, if you will, right? But it still continued to exist as a shell of what it used to be all the way up until 2005.
Oh, wow.
It existed as a hotel at the very end, sometimes offering daily rates and sometimes with folks who stayed extended periods, almost just like regular housing for some folks. But when Hurricane Katrina hit, because the business was already struggling, they couldn't afford insurance, and so Hurricane Katrina dealt the final blow to the, well, not the final
not
blow
final.
To the Dew Drop Inn, right? But so it's been sitting there with a lot of desire to be restored ever since. And so it sat around dormant for another 15 years or so before a project actually took effect to restore it.
Yeah, and it was getting, you know, it received a lot of attention from time to time, but it was getting pretty close to being, at least from outward looks, it was getting pretty close to being past the point of salvage, it looked like, anyway.
You couldn't be more right.
Right. How did you guys come involved in it? What brought you to it?
So I'm not shy about saying that I did not know this history prior to. There was a gentleman who was working on the project who called me. He was looking to redevelop the Dew Drop Inn, and I think he had a lot of things lined up. But last minute, some things just didn't go right for him. And I think in a last-ditch effort, he called me. He didn't know me. I didn't know him. But people told him he should call me, and I think he mistakenly thought I just had a bunch of money or something. Right? but I said, well, the skill that I do have is a developer. Let me see if I could be helpful to you. And I drove by just to take a look at it, and I happened to meet Kenneth Jackson, Frank Pagne's grandson. Mm-hmm. He just happened to be outside that day.
Really?
So I feel like it was fate. And we got into just a regular old New Orleans conversation. He's like, I know your people, you know? And so, but even then, that deal, it was too late for me to be helpful. And I wasn't sure how interested I was into going into a whole different aspect of the real estate business. Mm-hmm. So it that just didn't happen at that point. But it seemed that people would just bring it up to me randomly. I was thinking about you, and yeah, what about me? Well, I think you should do the Do Drop In. Like, those kinds of things would just randomly sure. happen. And there was a whole bunch of events that at some point I was like, you know what? I mean, I've at this point had grown to love the project, love the history, what it's all about. And so I figured I'd go ahead and give it an attempt. And I guess the not so short version of the story, it was under contract with yet another person who was trying, another team that were trying to make it happen. And well, I told Mr. Jackson, I said, hey, look, if that falls through, let me be your first phone call. And he did call me, in fact, when that didn't happen. And so we started on this, I want to say like late 2020. We really inked the deal early 2021.
Okay.
Closed on the construction financing in March of 2022, I'm sorry. And because it took a long time. Yeah. There's a lot of pieces financially to put together to make this happen.
Yeah. But,
you know, so it's been in construction since April of last year.
Okay. And as we were talking before we turned on the microphone, I drive past it every day. And the progress has been pretty rapid from that point. Obviously, it took a long time to get there. One of the things you mentioned that I kind of want to highlight for people is kind of the scope of the project. It's called the Do Drop In, and people maybe don't realize it was an inn. Like you said, you know, it was in the Green Book. It was a safe haven. Performers came, but they needed a place to stay, so it provided that. And you guys are bringing that back. So talk a little bit about the scope of the project, what's included, because I think so many people are excited about the music hall, but it's more than that. It's a lot more than that.
Oh, man. And wait till you see it. Yeah. I mean, like, in terms of all aspects of it, the hotel and all that. So to back up and answer your question, it was a barbershop. It was, and that's the very first thing that it was, because Frank was a barber. So then, of course, it was a nightclub slash music venue. It was a restaurant, and it was a bar. And I mentioned hotel. I did not mention hotel. It was a hotel. And so, and that was common for buildings, black-owned buildings at that time, to serve a multi-purpose. And a lot of Dewdrop's contemporaries, unfortunately, are no longer available to be restored. So our goal with the project, I always say, is to be as close to what it used to be as possible. And so we will be live music once again. We will be a hotel once again, a bar and a restaurant. And I've added a little new wrinkle. There's a pool in the back, and you know, we expect people to come with a daily pass to be able to swim. So even if you're not like staying at the hotel, you can come and enjoy the pool. We'll have a full bar and all that kind of stuff, so people can lounge and get away from the heat for a little bit.
So
that is the intent.
Yeah. The other thing that, and I got to just stop and say, I'm jumping ahead, but I can't wait for the day that we get to see Deacon John and Irma Thomas back in that space.
You and me both.
I just think that those will be magical shows to have them, hopefully have them both back in that space.
Yeah.
Deacon John, such a performer, and Irma Thomas, the queen of New Orleans, you know, I just, and I can't imagine how emotional for the two of them that will be. But one of the other things that really interested me about your work in this project is that you've been very committed to doing this in a very deliberate way, bringing in small disadvantaged business owners, minority business owners. So talk a little bit about that, because it's complicated enough to do this project and to pull all these multifaceted pieces you've talked about. But then you've taken on this additional step of really trying to involve community partners. So could you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a lot of motivation for that. Number one is because I am and I have been that small minority-owned business that needs an opportunity. And so that I'd say that's where it's born from, right? And so, but I also work in the world of affordable housing, where that's development with more of a heart. And so along with providing affordable housing, what I learned is that as a developer, you spend a whole lot of money, and that gives you power. That gives you power to determine who gets opportunities. And I want to be able to use that in a way that's beneficial to our city. I find that when you support small minority-owned businesses, they also hire minorities. And that gives an opportunity for everyone in the community to have a chance to benefit economically. And so that's just something that's just, it's what I do. It's naturally what I do. But I don't think that I'm unique as a black business owner. a lot of us do that.
Right? Sure.
So, but yes, with this project, it certainly took a lot of intention to make sure that that is what we're accomplishing. So we have worked with a lot of minority-owned businesses, woman-owned businesses, to not only in the world of construction, you know, we're intentional about making sure that that's happening. But before we even get to construction, the one of the first people to work on the project was Studio Kiro, which is a Japanese woman-owned architecture firm. And they've been in it with me so long and so dedicated, I feel like they're a partner in this deal. Nice. And but we've also worked with some companies that are minority-owned. And although they have tons of experience, this might be the first time they're stepping out and doing their own thing. And so we've been intentional about that. But it's not just about creating those opportunities, although it is very much that. It's also about, like, what is this project historically?
Sure.
And how do we honor what this project was historically? And that is an additional reason why we put that intention behind it. And you're absolutely right. Sometimes it is harder. It creates a bit of a needle in a haystack situation to find the business that you need who fits that profile. And I want to be clear about this. Everybody works on this project. You know, it's not, I'm not just, you know, picking and choosing to work with only minority-owned businesses.
Right, sure.
Everybody has an opportunity here because this is a New Orleans gem.
Yeah.
And I just want this to be reflective of our entire community.
Sure. Well, and that's the reason I highlighted. I think that it's a, maybe not a unique approach, but it seems like very in keeping with the foundation of the Dewdrop Inn as an original place. Mm-hmm. And to bring it back to that, it was very much a part of the community it's in, probably built by people in that community. And so to bring that back, and of course, again, several other people have tried and not succeeded in doing this. And you guys have the light at the end of the tunnel, I think. You know, I don't want to jinx the project, but you're there.
Yeah.
What's it going to be like to turn the inn, to open those keys, open the door? What do you...
Honestly, that question gave me chills. But I get a little bit of it every day. You know, there are moments when I've walked in and gotten a little bit emotional just seeing what we've achieved so far. I think that not only am I proud, but I think that a lot of people will be proud. If, you know, if you're a Black person, it's going to resonate with you. Mm-hmm. If you're a New Orleanian, it's going to resonate with you. If you're a music lover, it's going to resonate with you. If you love old buildings being restored, it's going to resonate with you. There's so many reasons that people will be excited about this project. And so to be a part of that is, I just feel so lucky. I mean, there, don't get me wrong, it's hard work and there are days that I don't feel so lucky, right? But that is what grounds me.
Yeah.
Knowing that I am really lucky, I am fortunate that my career has led me to be prepared to be able to do this, and then to be in the right place at the right time to accept the opportunity. So when the doors open, I will be elated. And I think that many in the city, maybe even in the country, maybe even in the world, will be just as excited as I am.
Yeah. So I noticed in the last couple of weeks, the coming soon signs have gone up over the covering up the marquee. So do you guys have an estimated date? And I realize I won't hold you to it.
Yeah.
I know that's flexible.
Yeah, I mean, because just I was on the news last week and I said October. And I meant it. But this is construction, and there's a lot of pieces that even when the construction is done, there's things that have to happen, right?
Got to finish it
so
out.
So right now, October is looking more like November, but I do believe that we are close enough that the goalpost is going to stop.
Okay.
And so we're trying to come up with a reasonable date. It's starting to look more so like November, but don't be surprised if we can pull out October. Mm-hmm. And look, I need to plug this because it's a moving date. You can follow us on our website at dewdropinnola.com. You can also follow us on social media at dewdropinnola. And that's where you'll get the latest and greatest and actual dates.
And we'll put links to all that in the show notes so that people can do that.
We appreciate that.
Yeah, building the excitement for it.
Yeah.
Again, I see it every day. I see the progress every day. And it's been, although it took a long time to get there, once you guys got started, it's been relatively quick. Maybe the days don't feel like it to you.
Yeah,
but
no,
you look
at it. And that's a credit to the general contractor, Ryan Goody.
Yeah.
I mean, I have gone there on a Sunday. And right now, you know, it's typical job site usually where it's like the guys start pretty early, but about 4 o'clock they're gone. Not these days. If I go in there at 8 o'clock, there's still a few people working in there trying to hit these schedules, right? So there's times that I've gone in on Sunday and people are working, and then I go in Monday morning at 10 o'clock and I see things that I didn't see. It happens all the time that if I go the next day, I see big things that have happened since the last time I was there. So it is moving very quickly, and I'm impressed and delighted.
That's great. Is there, as we start to wrap up, is there anything else you want to mention or talk about with the project that maybe I didn't ask you?
Not really. I think there's a lot of gratitude to go around. The city has been so supportive, and I mean the city government, but I also mean the people. I don't think I've heard a negative word about the project since I've been working on it. And that has never happened in my career, right? And so I am grateful that people are so supportive and so excited. It makes this monumental task a lot easier. And I'm also just grateful because there's an aspect of this business that is brand new to me. I've done development all the time. I've never run hospitality. I've never run a music venue, right? And so I'm foolish enough to believe that it's going to be successful, but in part not because of what I know, but because I'm excited about these folks that I mentioned on the front end, some people that have just started their business to help me run the hotel, to help me run the F&B, folks who are helping me to pull everything together that needs to happen to get to opening and marketing and all of those types of things. Like, I will be forever in debt to the people who are working on this project. And I tell you, I don't want them to be nameless because they are killing it.
Well, and you know, the other thing about where the Dew Drop Inn is, there really is no hotel close by. There is no music venue close by anymore. There used to be, but there isn't. So I think it's going to be a boon for that neighborhood as well.
Yeah.
You have some great hole-in-the-wall bars and restaurants not far from there, but now all of a sudden you're going to have people coming as a destination, I think, from all over the city and all over, period. And so I think it's going to really lift up the neighborhood as well, which I think is going to be a nice bonus to this.
I agree with that. I know, now, as an affordable housing developer, one of the things that I do worry about is displacement.
Oh, sure.
And I as an affordable housing developer with that hat on, I wish that there are ways that I could preserve some housing for folks who contribute to building the culture so that they can stay in the neighborhood and take part of all the greatness that's about to happen. Yeah. But I do expect this to be a place that draws people back to this neighborhood. And so I've got some other ideas in the works on how we might be able to celebrate the entire history of the neighborhood and not just the Dew Drop Inn. As you asked me another thing that I want to share, I realized that I did not share that the Dew Drop Inn will always honor that past that made it so great. And one of the ways that we're doing that is each of the rooms will be named after someone special who spent time at the Dew Drop Inn.
Nice.
And not just named, but it'll be like a mini exhibit, a museum exhibit. So, and it's not just because it was a person with a big name that they would get a room. Right. They have to have an intimate connection with the Dew Drop Inn. So I talked about Ray Charles and Little Richard and their intimate connections, right? But Marvin Gaye, who I always use as an example, I mean, I love Marvin Gaye, love his music. He wouldn't have a room though, because his history isn't that close to the Dew Drop Inn.
Right.
But then there's a lot of our greats here who will have a room, folks like we talked about Deacon John, who's been a wonderful ambassador to the project, Irma Thomas, Alan Toussaint, you know, James Booker, folks like that. There will be rooms and people will go in and learn a little bit more about their history and their connection to the Dew Drop Inn. We'll also have some common areas where there are exhibits and opportunities for people to learn more about the history of the Dew Drop Inn.
Nice. I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to see live music there. Check out the hotel. Thank you, Curtis, for joining me today. I really appreciate your passion and your energy and taking the time, especially at this moment, to talk about it.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed the conversation.
If you enjoyed the episode, please support our sponsors and consider supporting me either through Patreon or with a one-time tip via PayPal or Venmo. You can find me at Beyond Bourbon ST. With that, I'm going to turn it over to my girls to close us out.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do.
Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.